War Room, Pandemic. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
We want to pivot because we want to do signal and not noise for this second hour about a topic that's coming up. If you look downrange, we haven't gotten to the firestorm over mass, the firestorm over critical race theory in the schools, right? What has led to this taking the country back village by village, school board by school board? Dan Schultz's precinct committeeman strategy, and everyone in the audience has to go to precinctstrategy.com. If you want to become a patriot like happened in South Carolina and in Georgia, and reach out to people in these chat rooms, ask the people, and people in Georgia, I know there was thousands there that were War Room things. Please go into the chat rooms. Please go into the live chats and give your experiences. Tell people what it's like and tell people how it feels to be empowered, where you're actually in charge. That's what's happening in this country. We want to give you signal, not noise, because the main event hasn't arrived. The main event is now upon us, and that main event is the vaccines in the vaccine passports. And I'm not an anti-vaxxer, okay? First off, as a kid, but more importantly, in the military, you didn't really have a choice. So I know a lot of anti-vaxxers. I hear the arguments. I'm certainly vaccine hesitant, right? Because I don't actually understand the logic of what they're talking about, right? Of how they actually get there, particularly when you're talking about people that have had the, you know, now they're admitting if you've had the virus before, you don't need it. But it just seems to me so much misinformation in such a forced way. They're trying to get people incentivized even by giving $1 million, free college. And of course, the vaccine rates are collapsing. That's why you're seeing, going to see this fall. And Fauci, they were the ones that broke it on that AP story. Fauci saying, hey, the kids are all going to be, the 12 to 15s are going to start being vaccinated as soon as they get back to school. And his quote, the children will be vaccinated by the end of the year, and that'll get them up to the herd immunity, because you need 80 or 90% of the people vaxxed. Whereas they don't calculate the basic thing of herd immunity from the very first day of the show was the natural immunity that builds up from having the virus. So it's nothing but a constant bombardment of information that just doesn't make sense. And that's where the common sense of the American people are going to say, hey. And that's where you're seeing these mothers stand up now for the mass situation and for critical race theory. You have not seen the firestorm when you start to either have forced vaccinations of the children, or the children are kind of othered by not having the vaccination. So we want to get back to it. And that's the first guest. We reached out, somebody we've kind of studied what everything he said online and other things. It's Mike Yeadon, joins us from England. He was on the other day. Mike, just to start off with, because we always like to say, tell people, hey, if it's about the election fraud, we want to make sure it's in a court case or make sure it's something sanctioned by a state legislature. It's just not people on YouTube or people throwing out concepts and ideas. This actually has a place to adjudicate it. We have to show evidence. I want to make sure, you worked at Pfizer, but I want you to walk through briefly your academic background, your work at Pfizer, and then afterwards you started your own company, I think sold it for $350 million, a biotech company. Walk through your bona fides in this area, sir.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you very much, Steve, for having me back again. So, yes, Dr. Mike Yeadon, my first degree is a joint honours biochemistry and toxicology. And I got not just a first class honours, I got the highest first class the university ever awarded. I followed that by a 3-year research based PhD. That was respiratory pharmacology. It was partly funded, actually, by the military. After that PhD, I worked for 7 years at the Wellcome Research Labs until they merged with Glaxo, which went on to become GSK. And at that time, I went to Pfizer in the UK, and I was there 17 years. I finished as their vice president and chief scientist of allergy and respiratory research. So I was responsible for the worldwide research and development up to clinical proof of concept across the whole company. And then after that, I left them 10 years ago on very good terms, by the way. I loved working with Pfizer. For the last 10 years, 5 of those years, I started, raised all the money for and led as CEO a biotech called Ziarko. We acquired a compound from my former portfolio at Pfizer that was surplus. We converted it into a dermatology asset, and we sold it to Novartis, the world's biggest drug company, for roughly $350 million. At least that's the rumored sum. I'm not allowed to tell you the actual sum, but it was pretty good. And then along in that 10 years, I've consulted to 30 startup biotech companies, 2 of which are now public, Apellis Pharmaceuticals and Pulmatrix.
So if I had, as an investment banker, my Goldman Sachs hat, if we had to reach out to a consultant on an M&A project, you would consider yourself to be among the top practitioners in the world, not just theoreticians in universities, but people that actually go to work for these big pharmaceutical companies and actually have to take theoretical science and use applied research to actually get products in the field, correct? That is, I would take it, your specialty?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. So we originated programs in-house, but I also led for 10 years the in-licensing team at Pfizer. So we reviewed 100 companies in that 10 years and we did 3 deals.
Perfect. This is that. Okay. My point. This is a guy. That's not some guy up on YouTube talking smack. This is one of the top professionals in the world from the heart of the industry. This is what we call a subject matter expert with credentials that cannot be questioned, because it's just, they're so on every level, whether it's the academic background, the years at the big corporations, grinding it out, going out as an entrepreneur, really doing a lot what he did in the lab, creating a great company, selling, and everyone, whether it's Glaxo or Wellcome or Novartis or Pfizer, this is the creme de la creme. You're playing at the highest level, okay? So, yeah. Dr. Mike Yeadon, I then want to go through, make your case about your problem as a professional about this whole vaccine problem, how it originated, where we stand, and where you think it's headed, sir.
Yeah, certainly. I can do that quickly. So I'm very pro-vaccines. I'm particularly pro-safe medicines. And my biggest beef with the vaccines includes serious concerns about safety. But I've just got 3 points to make about the vaccines. In absolute honesty, I don't think they're even necessary. Why are they not necessary? Well, that's because there are at least 4 or 5 safe and effective medicines, and their presence has been suppressed and hidden from the public. So they're not really necessary. The next is, it's not even clear if they're effective enough. The trials have been done in a really strange way where they used, say, PCR positivity as the end point with one minor symptom. So most people think if a vaccine works, it saves you from serious disease or death. And those things were not measured in the trial. So I'm not saying they don't work. I'm saying the data is not clear. And then finally, they have not been sufficiently tested. They have been approved for emergency use, fraudulently in my view, because they shouldn't do it if there are safe and effective medicines, and there are, they've just been hidden. So it's an emergency use only, and that means they've been plucked from the middle of late stage development. They've still got about 1.5 years of clinical phase to run, and they normally collect safety information as well as efficacy information. We don't have that data because we're already out inoculating 1 billion people. But along the way, we've gathered some safety concerns, Steve.
Okay. Hang on for a second, Dr. Yeadon. I want to go back to something, because you come from the industry and you've actually made money on things that relate to vaccines. You say you're pro-vaccine, right? You're not an anti-vaxxer crusader.
Absolutely.
You're not even vaccine hesitant if it's proper. But I want to go back to your first point, because this is where people say, hey, I see on TV and I see all these prominent scientists and they work with all these big companies and they seem like solid citizens. And in the managerial expert world we live in, they're presented by experts, by NBC and CNN and Time Warner and the New York Times, and all the expert after expert. I want to go back to your first point. You said it was suppressed. What are the 2 or 3 things you think work? Why do you think they work? And why were they suppressed?
Okay, so hydroxychloroquine is a very common one, and it reduces viral replication. So when it's given at the early stages of infection, it definitely reduces the viral load in a person, makes it less likely they will progress. Sometimes they add zinc as well, because the hydroxychloroquine works by letting zinc into cells. Another major one is ivermectin, which is an off-patent antiparasitic. It also happens to have antiviral effects as well. Then the last two, I guess, would be azithromycin, which is an off-patent antimicrobial, but it also has anti-inflammatory properties, which we knew about. And then finally, inhaled steroids like budesonide that are commonly used in asthma. If you have those 4 drugs, Dr. Peter McCullen believes that almost no one who isn't right at the end of life needs to die of this virus. And why have they been suppressed? Steve, I don't know, but I think it's part of a fraud. I was on last week and I told you that all the main narrative points about the virus are, so we say, adjacent to the truth, lies, frankly. designed to make people fearful. And I think suppressing the drugs, the treatments, has had two benefits for whoever's doing this. One is it makes people willing to take the vaccine, and it makes vaccines available much earlier than they otherwise would and should have been. So that's probably the motivation.
Let me add, what, because look, some of our stuff was taken down back in the spring, and some of, we would have some of the experts on here about hydroxy, ivermectin, the very things you're talking about, not the steroids, but the first three, you know, we'd be taking down our Twitter account. For how did the social media companies, what was their rationale, and what expert opinions did you ever hear of people that could back up everything that this was all voodoo, witchcraft, dangerous?
Yeah, I wasn't very close to this while it was going on. I was focusing last year on PCR testing, but I had a very good friend, a physician, Dr. Tess Laurie in the UK, and she was reporting that they were writing up reviews of, you know, collected clinical information from around the world, and it was clear in her case that ivermectin was working really well, and they were literally suppressing the manuscripts at journal level. So I'm talking about medical journals that you would think of as being beyond reproach. Someone was leaning on them and refusing to publish papers that were written to at least the same quality as everything else they were publishing. So you know, I'm afraid it was just, they were tortured.
But Dr. Yeadon, science goes forward today with peer review journals. That's kind of the high priesthood. It's kind of the high priesthood of scientific knowledge. How could the high priesthood be corrupted? Because essentially what you're saying is, at even at that level, that there was suppression from outside. What outside forces do you believe? We got about 30 seconds. What outside forces do you think got into the the temple?
I think journals have been provided with a lot of money, sometimes actually acquired by interests that are now being manifest. And almost all scientists everywhere outside of industry, if they're in universities, they have to beg, steal and borrow for their grants. So all the major granting bodies are also, I think, part of the pressurizing of this system. Scientific review only works when you release the pressure, and there's a lot of pressure on these people.
Okay, we're going to take a short commercial break. We're going to return with Dr. Michael Yeadon. Mike Yeadon was a senior scientist at Pfizer, one of the senior researchers, chief scientist for a number of areas, impeccable credentials. We're going to return with his thoughts on the coming vaccine crisis next in the War Room. We will fight till they're all gone. We rejoice when there's no more. Let's take down the CCP. The Biden administration has the pedal to the floor in this economic and finance plan that is total and absolute madness. Trillions of dollars of spending and no way to finance it. They're trying to cut taxes for corporations. The Chinese and the Japanese have all the bonds they want. So what do they have to do? They have to print money. Here's what you need to do to take care of your financial future. You need to talk to the experts in precious metals, gold and silver. Who is that? Birch Gold. They have an A-plus rating by the Better Business Bureau. Now, how do you get there? It's very simple. You're going to text Bannon, B-A-N-N-O-N, at the following number, 484848. Text Bannon, B-A-N-N-O-N, at 484848. You're going to get a 20-page brochure that walks you everything through gold and silver you need to know. In addition, you're going to be able to have access to a Birch Gold specialist. Look, we are in very uncertain times. You cannot risk your retirement. You need to consider gold and silver in your investment alternatives. Go to Birch Gold today by going to Bannon, B-A-N-N-O-N, at 484848. That is, text Bannon, B-A-N-N-O-N, at 484848. Don't hesitate. Use your agency. Action, action, action. Don't do it today. Do it right now.
War Room, Pandemic, with Stephen K. Bannon.
The epidemic is a demon, and we cannot let this demon hide.
War Room, Pandemic. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Okay, whether you think this is a bioweapon from the Wuhan lab or you think it's a total and complete hoax, the one thing we've learned together in this journey over the last, 18 months, is that you have to boost your immune system, and only you can do it. This whole show is about human agency and human action. Go to warroomdefense.com today. We have the free vitamin D3 and zinc. You got to pay shipping and handling. But more importantly, get access to information about how you boost your immune system and what you need to do it. The work on oneself begins with oneself. Take action today. Also want to thank MyPillow.com. Go to MyPillow.com, type in promo code War Room, check out the Total Sleep System. It's the latest invention coming out of the guys at the men and women at MyPillow, one of the great American companies. You got a scientific R&D mattress, state-of-the-art, pillows, sheets, all of it, 30% off by typing in promo code War Room, 10-year guarantee. But more importantly, if you don't love it, and I don't mean like, if you like it, send it back. If you love it, keep it. But in 6 months, you get full cash back, money back guarantee from Mike Lindell and the team. Okay, I want to return now to Dr. Mike Yeadon, formerly of Pfizer. Dr. Yeadon, there's going to be a fire. I don't know about the rest of the world, but I can guarantee you there's going to be a firestorm starting in August in this nation, the United States of America, when the mothers in this country that have already been up on this whole mask situation and critical race theory at the school board level, when they go back, and according to Dr. Fauci, this is not Stephen K. Bannon, this is Fauci's interviews with Savannah Guthrie at the morning show at NBC, the Today Show, also what he told the AP, that they're going to start vaccinating the 12 to 15-year-olds, the kids in middle school and high school, as soon as they get back in the fall, and that the school children will be vaccinated by the end of the year. His words, not Bannon's. I want you to walk through. There's going to be a firestorm because this is not the anti-vax crowd. I'm talking about the vaccine hesitant mothers, right? Joined with the anti-vaxxers. But the, and that, to me, is two-thirds of the country, two-thirds of the mothers. Walk us through your thoughts about this vaccine, particularly for adolescents and for school-aged children and younger.
Yeah, certainly. So just to reiterate, I'm of the industry my whole career, and I'm generally pro-vaccine, but I'm pro-safety, and these COVID-19 vaccines are not safe. Very briefly, they're not safe because the gene-based design makes your body manufacture virus spike protein, and we know, and we've known for years, that virus spike proteins trigger blood clots. So there's plenty of literature. No one can fault the statement I've just made. And Dr. Vodarg and I wrote to the European Medicines Agency in December pointing that out. So that's a fundamental problem. About 75% of the adverse events that occur after vaccination, which are very much higher than usual, relate to thromboembolic events, that is blood clots and bleeding. So what I've just said about the design and the property of spike protein exactly matches these serious adverse events that are emerging. Now, here's the real problem I've got, Steve, and I'm a father and a grandfather. Young people are not susceptible to COVID-19. If they acquire the virus, they usually have no symptoms and they shrug it off very easily. So they're not at risk. It's a crazy thing then to vaccinate them with something that is actually 50 times more likely to kill them than the virus itself. That statement.
Okay. Hang on for a second. People are going to see, and look, I'm sure we're going to get grief from everybody, but, and I wanted you to back this up. People look on television, they see the government, they see it from the White House, but they see it on every network from morning to night. They see celebrities now, but more importantly, the celebrities are the TV personalities. They see people in white coats. They see scientists from the best universities in the world, okay, that absolutely are counter to what you're saying. They're saying, number one, this is safe. And number two, it is a necessity. It's safe and it's necessary. So I just want to go back when you have so many prominent people, and I don't want to talk about what their intentions are, why they're doing it, but I want you to counter that with, I want you to point to facts, evidence, data that supports it's, they're not safe, number one, and number two, they're not necessary.
Absolutely. So on the not safe, you've got a pretty good adverse event monitoring system in the U.S. Perfect, but the VAERS system, I think, is at least transparent and anyone can enter. So at any stage over the last decade or so, if anyone has an adverse effect after vaccination with whatever vaccine, then they or a physician can enter a report. And we know that it only captures a low frequency of the adverse events. What we know, though, is if you look from about January of this year and compare month by month with any other month in the previous 10 years, the number of serious adverse events reported after COVID-19 vaccines is just enormous. I think it's between 50 and 100 times higher than previously. That's not my data. It's the US public data that any watcher can go and check in 5 minutes for themselves and check that I'm telling you the truth. And the serious adverse event I'm most concerned with is death. And I think you're running between 4,500 and 5,000 deaths in the last 6 months. You normally run at 200 a year for all vaccines combined.
Let me ask you one, the criticism that, oh, VAERS is just a raw data. You can't, because you see them coming on TV all the time. That's just raw data. And the guys are using that because they can cherry pick that. How do you defend the criticism that you're just cherry picking the data? That's all just raw. It's not filtered. It's not checked out. How do you counter that?
Yeah. So it is always raw. So basically, it's an all-comers system. There is no reason at all why more people would be reporting side effects now than previously. In fact, I would say it's less likely. I know personally of many people who've had minor side effects, pains in the leg or chest. That's not that that's minor. And their physician told them, no, absolutely not linked. Don't bother to report it in the UK yellow card system, which is the equivalent of the ERS. So there's no reason anyone can point to that says that the run rate, the reporting rate is going to be different after this vaccine than any other, if anything, on the downside. And yet the number of deaths per million vaccinations is running a small difference. It's appalling, bluntly, as someone of the industry. These should all have been withdrawn a long time ago. I think a count of 50 deaths associated with a product would pretty much kill any 4,500 in the U.S. alone.
Okay. Look, you spent a good portion of your adult life with a place you said you loved. And actually, you learned a lot. You went on to be a very successful entrepreneur of that. You never had any complaints. You were there. You left under good terms. Why would a place, an institution that when you were there stood for the highest, quality and folks trying to do what's their best thing, why would that institution turn to basically support something that you now say is not safe?
I have no explanation. So all I can say is I do not recognize the behavior of any of the pharmaceutical companies specifically in respect of the COVID-19 vaccines. I'm afraid they're all behaving badly, and I have no idea why they're doing it.
Let's go back to this. Not necessary. Your second point. Point to me the data for both adolescents and school children. And children, why do you say, Dr. Mike Eden, that these are not necessary to have them vaccinated at all?
Yes. So one of the things I mentioned last week is that there was an exaggeration about the lethality of this virus. A couple of things. One is it was much worse than anything we've seen before. And second, that almost everybody was susceptible. Now, the reality is it is worse for our seniors, people over 70 who already have chronic illnesses of some kind. They are at greater risk of becoming ill and dying. But if you're younger than 70, here's the point, and this came from one of your best published, Dr. Ioannidis, I think, of Stanford. And he has shown that if you're under 70 and otherwise fit and well, you're at less risk from COVID-19 mortality than from influenza. And this continues as you get younger and younger, the gap grows. So with young children under 15, they're much more likely to die of seasonal influenza than COVID-19. It's a rare event, but it does occur with influenza. But in Britain, for example, I think there wasn't a single child under 13 or 14 who was previously well, not a single one who died, not one. So they're not healthy young children are not at risk from dying from this virus. And consequently, you shouldn't give them a medical intervention, let alone one, unfortunately, that does have these safety liabilities, which I think are caused by design, by making your body express this coagulant spike protein.
Dr. Eden, we only got about a minute left. What would you recommend to the mothers out there, mothers and fathers, but particularly mothers, to get more information to make their own judgment? What would you recommend they go to? Where do you recommend they go to get more information about this?
I would go to the website of the American Association of Physicians and Surgeons. You'll find good information by Dr. Peter McCulloch, one of America's most famous cardiorenal specialists, and he and his team have put together some good guidelines on treatment and on risks. But finally, I would say, don't allow your children to be given this vaccine. They do not need it, and I think it's dangerous for them.
Dr. Eden, how do people get more access to you? Social media, YouTube, all that. How do they get website? How do they get to you?
I have found that I've been so heavily censored that I don't run my own website. But there's a guy called Robin Monotti, M-O-N-O-T-T-I. He's got a great Telegram site, and I tend to push stuff out through Robin's portal.
Okay, Raheem, we'll put that in the thing. Dr. Eden, I want to thank you for taking the time today. It's been extraordinary. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
So it's a dollar crash that's going to end the party, and the dollar crash is coming, and so people need to be prepared for that.
Go to 8weekacademy.com to claim your free copy of Jerry Norton's most popular training. In it, he reveals his blueprint for making $100,000 per year with real estate.
So Peter, it's a pleasure to be here with you. Excited to have you here on the channel.
Oh, thanks. Welcome to Puerto Rico, Jerry.
Yeah, we're brand new here, and we're here in Peter's house, and this is our first of three videos that we're going to be doing. And Peter, I'm excited to talk to you about the housing market. And it's funny, I went back on your YouTube channel and I went through your videos, and I see you talking about all kinds of topics, and we couldn't really find something related to real estate too much. So this is going to be really exciting for me to talk to you and ask you a little bit about where you think we're going with the housing market. And it's interesting, as you know, and probably everybody listening, real estate is breaking all the records right now. We've had this massive appreciation. In fact, Peter, before we get started here, I'd like to read a couple of statistics. So this is Redfin just put these stats out for April. So these are the April numbers. And so the national median home prices reached $370,528, which is a 22% increase year over year from this time last year. The number of homes for sale sank to a record low, average of only 19 days on the market. And 49% of homes sold for above asking price, which is also a record high. And this is what Redfin chief economist Daryl Fairweather, this is what he said. There simply aren't enough homes for sale in America for everyone with the desire and the means to buy one right now. Until new construction takes off over the course of years, not months, home prices will continue to increase. This housing boom is nowhere close to over. Now, Peter, you predicted the 08 mortgage meltdown, the real estate crash that happened then. Do you think we're in a bubble? Do you think the market, the real estate market, is going to crash? If so, when and why?
All right, so you got a lot of questions wrapped up in there.
Yeah.
And first of all, you know, of course, there's a bubble. I mean, it's not even debatable. I mean, we're in the mother of all bubbles here. In fact, this area of Puerto Rico, we all just refer to it as living in the bubble. And now it is literally, figuratively, a bubble. I mean, here, this part of Puerto Rico is probably the epitome of it, you know. And I recognize that what's going on is not real. But what's happening in housing, it's not really that there's a boom in housing. The boom is in inflation. It's the money supply. I mean, there's government keeps printing money, and so everybody's got money to spend, but that doesn't mean that there's anything to buy, because just printing money doesn't create purchasing power. So if you give everybody money, and if you hold mortgage rates artificially low, because we've got record low mortgage rates, and all this money being created, so people, oh yeah, let me go buy a house. But just because you have money doesn't mean somebody has built a house. But, you know, because the Fed can print money, but they don't print goods. And so homes need to be constructed. But part of the problem with all this money printing is that the cost of building homes is skyrocketing. In fact, we just got, just before you came in today, we got the housing numbers, and it was a big disappointment. There was a big, miss on home sales. And they downwardly rose the previous month, so not nearly as many as they thought. And the big reason is, A, consumers can't afford to buy the prices because they're so high. Even with the record low financing, the amount of money that they have to borrow means the monthly payments are still, you know, beyond their reach. But also the supply is not there because the builders can't build. And a lot of the people that already own homes, they don't want to move. And so you have all this demand, and especially when you have all the people that were living in the big cities that were told, hey, you don't have to show up for work, you can work from home. And now the cities, you know, have a lot more crime and there's a lot of other problems and there's high taxes. And now people are like, oh, I don't have to live here. I can work from home. But, you know, my condo is too small to work from home anyway. I need more space. And they're also worried about what if there's another, you know, COVID or something and we have to get quarantined again. I don't want to be cramped up in this little inner city apartment. So people want to move out. They want to go to the suburbs of the country where they have more space, but there's nothing to buy because they're not able to construct it. So this is not so much a housing bubble as it is just inflation.
So are you saying, Peter, that this massive increase in price that we're seeing in real estate isn't so much appreciation, it's more inflation?
It's dollar depreciation. And obviously, as the cost of replacing homes goes up, because the cost of lumber, the cost of copper, other materials, or even labor, is it costs more and more to build a house. Well, the houses that are already built, well, they're more expensive because of what it would cost you to replace them. I mean, to me, it's different from the bubble that we had in the 2000s, which I called out early in advance and was writing articles on, and even got short the subprime market in 06, before the whole thing imploded. But that was more, everybody was speculating in houses and they were buying houses, zero down, teaser rates, adjustable rate mortgages. And
no verification, no income, yeah.
And housing was a clear bubble to me, but I don't think it's the same now as it was then. But if the Federal Reserve ever does the right thing and tries to turn off the monetary spigots, tries to put this inflation genie back in the bottle, then real estate prices are going to crash because they're going to have to raise interest rates very dramatically. And you're going to be looking at, the record high mortgage rates, but you can see mortgage rates go from where they are now, which is what, 3-4s, maybe up 8-10%. And if people have to pay 8-10% to get a mortgage, they can't buy these houses.
Your purchasing power goes down.
Right. Yeah. Most people don't have cash. They can only buy, with a mortgage. And of course, if the Fed has to fight inflation with aggressive rate hikes, the stock market's going to crash. The economy is going to tank in a recession. The government's going to have to start slashing spending. So a lot of people are going to be defaulting on their mortgages. And so home prices will really get killed.
And explain why that is. Why does raising interest rates offset the inflation? Why is that?
Well, what they have to do is they have to start reversing their easy money policies. They have to take money out of the economy, contract money supply. And they have to contract credit. They have to stop people from borrowing and spending and pushing prices up. But there'll be a protracted recession. I mean, it'd be the worse than the Great Recession if the Fed were to fight this inflation, which is why I don't expect the Fed to fight inflation. I expect the Fed to surrender to inflation. I mean, they will kind of bluff, which is what they're doing now. Oh, inflation is transitory, but if we're wrong, well, we've got the tools to fight it. No, they don't. I mean, maybe they have them, but they won't use them because the problem in their mind will be worse than, or the solution will be worse than the problem. So I think inflation is going to run out of control. So I don't expect a significant decline in home prices, but I expect home values to fall sharply in terms of real money. So if you want to take a look at, hey, I've got a house, how many ounces of gold is that house, right? If I sold this house, how many ounces of gold could I get? Or how many ounces of gold does it take to buy this house, right? So if you're going to measure the value of a house in terms of ounces of gold, it's going to collapse. Because all these prices, we're going to have a big deflation one way or another. So either prices are going to collapse in terms of dollars, or they'll collapse in terms of gold, which is what I expect. But that also means the dollar is going to collapse in terms of gold. But the problem for a lot of homeowners, they might think, oh, this is great, my home's going to go way up in price. Well, so is everything else. I mean, the price of the stuff that you have in your kitchen is going to go up faster than the price of the house, right? The groceries are going to be a lot more expensive. Now, the way people will make money as a homeowner is as a debtor. right? So you won't make money on your house. You'll make money on your mortgage, because the person who loaned you the money is going to suffer a huge loss, because they loaned you money and you bought something real, piece of property, and all they're going to get back is paper. But when you repay the mortgage, the lender is going to get money that doesn't buy very much. Whereas you were able to buy an actual house with that money, and now you're paying them back in the future with money that buys at low interest, and but it's low amount of money. So in that respect, you're a winner, because you screwed over the lender. So his purchasing power got transferred to you. But you're going to own this house, and it's going to be very expensive to maintain it. If something goes wrong, and as always the case with houses, you need to repair something, all those costs are going to go way up. So if you need a new roof, your new roof might end up costing more than you paid for the entire house. But you still need it. What are you going to do? Let the rain come in? So it's not just going to be a windfall for homeowners, because they're out from under their mortgage, because they're going to be looking at other costs that have gone up. And, your fuel costs, heating, electricity, cooling the house, all those maintenance costs are going to go way up with inflation. So it's going to be very problematic. Taxes, insurance costs could go way up. So it's not just a big windfall for the homeowner, but I do think it makes sense to have a mortgage. I mean, to own a house and have no debt on it, you give up the one benefit that you're gonna have, which is the fact that inflation wipes out your mortgage.
Yeah, I actually followed a piece of your advice 30 days or so ago, where what you had said was, you said the right move right now is to purchase things, because they're only going to be more expensive in 12 months from now or in the future because of this inflation that's happening. And so we've got a project, Peter, that we're building in Scottsdale. It's a new construction. I don't need my lumber yet. We went ahead and bought it all. We stockpiled it, and the lumber prices are increasing significantly, like every 30 days. We've already appreciated $30,000 in value in our lumber that we just bought.
Yeah, this is what is going to really change, and this is going to be part of the inflationary psychology that will help push up prices even faster. Because for years and years, people didn't keep a lot of inventory. This whole idea of just-in-time inventory. And so everybody was kind of lean, and you bought the things as you needed them. That's because you were confident that the prices, would be the same or maybe lower in the future. So why rush and buy? But the minute you start to see all of your input costs rising, and you start to think, wait a minute, why don't I just start building up inventory for things that I'm going to need in 6 months or a year or 2 years? Why wait and buy them when they're going to be more expensive? Let me just buy them now. And so now more and more people try to build up inventory and hoard up, stuff. And now that puts even more pressure on prices, because everybody is trying to buy stuff.
Yeah. So Peter, going back to the real estate then, are you thinking that what's going to cause the market to correct, possibly crash, is going to be when they have to fight this inflation and they have to raise interest rates, that the interest rate rise is going to diminish buying power? It's going to cause a real correction to happen. Is it going to be that? Is it going to be interest rates that does it?
Well, if they ever fight the inflation, interest rate increases are going to be huge. It's not like they're just going to take them up 50 basis points, 100 basis points. They're going to have to go Paul Volcker style. Rates got to 20% under Volcker. Mortgage rates maybe 14%, 13%, 14%. And we were a much more financially solvent nation back then than we are now. We didn't have anywhere near the type of debt problem.
But if you think about it, if you've got double-digit interest rates and you need to finance a home purchase, you now can buy a third or probably a fifth.
But not only that, down payment requirements are going to go up. I mean, if the Fed is tightening up on credit, it could be, okay, it's a 14% mortgage, but we need 30% down. None of this, 5% down stuff, or not even 20%. It could get very, very ugly in the real estate market, but it wouldn't just be the real estate market, it'd be the whole economy. But again, I think the Fed is going to look at that possibility as we can't do that. Like, no way we're going to allow that. They're just going to keep on printing, and they're going to destroy the value of the dollar. rather than destroy the, you know, the price of your home or your stocks. But in real terms, there's nothing they can do about preventing that decline. So I don't tell people to go out and over buy real estate. I mean, you can buy a place to live in it, but I think as a complete investment, there are much better places for your money. The only thing that's good about real estate is the ability to get the leverage, because you can borrow a lot more against a real estate. But once you get out from under your primary residence, and you start buying investment properties, the banks won't, they're going to want a bigger down payment. And usually they won't even give you a 30-year mortgage. You're getting a shorter term mortgage on an investment property. And so it's not as big a deal. What I think you really want to do, and what I've done, I mean, I own some property, but the bulk of my wealth is invested in non-US equities, stocks in other countries that pay good dividends. And the dividend yields that I'm able to get in most cases are probably better than the rental yields that people would get just buying rental property. And so what my plan would be on real estate is when real estate really goes down in real terms, not in nominal terms, but in real terms, then if I want to buy more property, I can sell off some of those stocks, some of my gold stocks or physical gold or whatever, and then I could use that to buy a piece of property. Right, because let's say a piece of property goes up double in terms of paper dollars, but falls 80% in terms of gold. Right, so from my vantage point, that property has crashed because I could buy it for a fraction of the ounces of gold that it would have cost earlier, or even all my other investments that are international.
And that's because you're putting no faith in the dollar, because the dollar is devalued.
Yeah, I mean, the dollar is going to be the biggest casualty of all this, because the only way the Federal Reserve keeps all this going, the only way they keep the markets propped up, keep the bond market propped up, to keep interest rates low, to prop up the housing market, to pop up the stock market, and to finance all the government deficit spending. I mean, where's all this money coming from? We're getting all this stimulus money. Well, where's it coming from? It's coming from the Fed. And the only way the Fed can keep the party going is to keep printing money. And so ultimately, the only thing that stops the party is when the money they're printing no longer buys anything.
But people have to live in houses, and we're not making enough houses for the people that need houses.
If you can't afford to make the houses, just because people need a house doesn't mean you're going to magically have a house.
Yeah.
You have to be able to produce the house, right? Homeless people all want homes. They just don't have the resources, right? And there's poor people all around the world. A lot of people in Africa don't have houses, right? I mean, so we're going to have a lot of Americans that don't have houses. But what's going to happen is families will start sharing the houses we have. So you'll see two or three families living in one house. People will have roommates. You'll have adult children living with their parents. You'll have older parents. See, what's going to happen is people are going to get wiped out who are retired, right? Social Security is going to be worthless, right? Your benefits will not go up with inflation. People's pensions get wiped out. So what are these people going to do? They have to go move in with their kids. They're not probably, you're 70, 80 years old. Maybe you're not going to be able to get a job. So you just have to downsize. You got to, where are you going to live? So, I mean, there's going to be big, big changes in the United States. People have just got to prepare for it, and that's what I'm trying to help people do. I'm trying to help my clients do. I mean, people that are following you, you can own a piece of property, but you better have a decent, position in non-dollar assets, foreign assets, gold, foreign stocks that you can then use, right? To make investments in the future or to finance your lifestyle.
So Peter, thank you so much for sharing all of your ideas and your wisdom. And guys, I'm going to put some links in the description below. It's going to be to Peter's podcast, his YouTube channel. We'll put your website in there as well, Peter. Peter does some asset management. He can help you if you're looking at taking your dollars and investing those in better places. So Peter will put some of those links where they can kind of check out some of your foreign investments you do and how you help people actually protect their investment, right? And create wealth in a way that's going to be long-term sustaining. So we'll put some of those links below. You guys can check Peter out. So again, Peter, thank you for your time, inviting us into your home and being able to share these ideas. Thanks a lot. And guys, if you haven't yet, be sure to subscribe to the channel, and we'll see you on the next video.